News Radio 690 KTSM presents the second hour of the El Paso History Show with documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk and historian Melissa Sargent, streaming live at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. And now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Normally, we start the hour with a history moment. I'm going to give an announcement first. We're going to Pepe's, and we're going to have lunch, and there will be some books available from Harry at Pepe's today. I'll give it about 12:30.
Yeah.
Give or take.
We should get there about 12:30.
Okay, now we're going to start the second hour of the History Show with an El Paso History Moment by Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance. Her topic today is a story about the guy, the guy who drove Pancho Villa's car.
Once a mechanic, always a mechanic. 17-year-old Severiano Hernandez was recruited to be the driver for General Pancho Villa's 1910 four-cylinder passenger sedan. This was a job that came with a tremendous amount of pressure, seeing as General Villa was well known for quickly dispensing of his soldiers that did not carry out his orders. One day, Severiano was driving General Villa through Chihuahua City when one of the tires was damaged so badly that it was just a matter of time before the vehicle would be useless. Severiano left Villa to find a tire. A local told him that there might be a tire or two at the smelter. The only problem was access to the smelter changed hands frequently between revolutionists and the federales. So he proceeded cautiously in the sedan to the smelter, knowing that the federales' artillery and revolutionists would be shooting at all incoming traffic. His plan to secure the tire was soon aborted when the roof of the sedan was blown off. Fearing for his life, he reported back to Villa that he failed his mission. The revolutionary leader was silent for a moment. Then he laughed and said, "I saw you. You look like a chicken with no feathers. You get that tire later. It's all right." Not long after that, Severiano decided to escape his leader's control in Zacatecas, Mexico, and flee to the border. By 1933, Severiano was living in El Paso with his wife and six children, working as an auto mechanic, and would often tell the story of his two-year stint as General Pancho Villa's driver. More history next week. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
Dun, 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 dun.
Imagine having the top of your car blown up and survive.
Oh, but he wasn't the guy in the car when Villa got shot.
Oh, no. This was way before. This was 1910, so this is
an earlier
around
driver.
That time, yeah. So, but I can't imagine, 17-year-old kid. He didn't like working for Villa, obviously.
I can imagine. Okay, you do this for the Alliance?
Yes, I do. If we want people to get involved in history, and one of the great groups that are involved in history is the El Paso History Alliance, and they have a Facebook page that is full of historic pictures, historical information, and history preservation updates. And the administrators are Max Grossman and Mark Stone. And one of the oldest Facebook pages is Remember in El Paso When. It's home to an amazing number of historic pictures, stories, and so much more. And that page is managed by Barbara Givenbaney and her great team.
Otherwise known as BGB. And she has administrators Margaret Smith, Rick Duncan, Paul Louie, and Ken Weiss and Craig Hayes. And so we're happy to work with them because they're happy to work with. In fact, we're streaming on their page right now.
That's right.
All right, looking at the history as we have been today, we've got Harry von Feilich. I look over.
It.
Did I get it right?
Perfect.
Harry von Feilich is sitting over here, and he's written a bunch of books on here. And we decided to add another guy to the conversation. And this guy's name is Florian. Florian, how do you pronounce your last name?
Florian Beitzel.
That's him.
Florian Beitzel.
You're right. Oh, well, there you are. Florian, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're
good
surviving.
Morning,
we're kind of surviving. If you're on a speakerphone, try not to use that. It sounds a little hollow. But I tell you, the stuff that you know, you're an expert, and you're also employed by the state of New Mexico, are you not?
Yes. So my full-time job is actually with the U.S. Army Engineer School. I'm their command historian, but then I'm also in the New Mexico Army National Guard, and I'm their command historian for New Mexico.
So. Oh, you're actually in the Guard.
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you for your service. And also to what you do in history with Harry, I'm going to turn you guys loose because we got as far as, like, Pancho Villa had been pretty much paid by the Germans through Felix Sommerfeld to go buy arms and do all kinds of stuff. we're now leading up to what we would call the raid on Columbus. What is your take, and where do you want to take us on all this?
Well, I want to really take you guys to the aftermath, what happens after Columbus, because we previously we talked about what happened in Columbus, why it happened as well, and, I mean, all of the things that Harry was talking about. So unless Harry has some other points that he wants to bring up before Columbus, I would just
First of all, Columbus. Great to hear from you, Florian. And
hey,
since I'm from Bavaria, I suppose that your last name is Southern German, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so we're coming from the same culture here. Well, you know, Jackson, I think one of the things that really needs to be said is, you know, why did Pancho Villa attack Columbus? What exactly was he thinking?
Yeah.
Because, you know, kind of a crazy thing.
What are you thinking?
And so maybe just put that in place, like we said in the last hour, you know, the Germans really wanted to have the United States busy at the border. So, and Felix Sommerfeld said, I can do this. And so how did he do it? And
picture zero.
So if you think about what it started out with is that Pancho Villa basically lost really badly. April 1915, he lost the battles of Celaya. In June, he lost the Battle of León against Obregón, who, by the way, lost his arm, but he won the battle, I guess.
Zero C.
And then he ran out of money. He ran out of loot. He went to Sonora. The Sonoran campaign was a disaster. In Agua Prieta, the Americans allowed the Carrancistas to travel by American rail to the battle and overwhelmed Villa, who didn't know or supposedly didn't know. I think he did know. But he attacked anyway. He only had one way to attack, frontal attack, no reserves, and that's not good.
That was before Columbus.
That's all before Columbus, you know. So he went, he lost in Agua Prieta, then he lost in Hermosillo. He finally went to Nogales. In Nogales, he got beaten badly again because Americans let Carrancistas come by rail from the American side. And it got really bad. Villa tried to get the Americans involved right there, so his cavalry was literally shooting at American soldiers on the other side and dared them to come across, but they didn't do it.
Yeah.
And then he went back to Chihuahua, and he actually declared war on the United States. It's something that is not really known very much, but he literally gave a speech, and he said, I will not shoot another bullet against Mexicans. I will always shoot gringos. And
was he governor at that time?
That was after he was governor.
After, yeah, because so he was that, governor for a while. Then.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so we got several pictures here of Columbus as it went by, and some of them they tore up that town pretty good.
Oh, it's not good. I mean, yeah, not good for the Americans there.
Right.
I mean, the one theory why not more happened is that the Villistas mistook the stables for the sleeping quarters of the cavalry there.
Really?
I have never been able to prove that.
Shot the wrong place.
Yeah, but they shot up the stables first, and that allowed the soldiers to get out and get some machine guns going, and so they chased them out of town.
Well, Florian, didn't they also have some brand-new machine guns Villa that wasn't aware of?
Well, they had the machine guns that Benoit from the French. They had some problems with those machine guns of just getting them into the action at first, but once they were in action and once there were fires started in Columbus, they really had a nice, backlit of getting those Villistas. So in the beginning, it was pretty chaotic. But then once the U.S., took the initiative, it was a pretty one-sided win. There's also, there's all kinds of different reasons or thoughts of why, of course, Pancho Villa attacked. Throughout on some of the reports that you see, is everybody says there could have been done more damage to the city and more Americans could have been killed, too. So I think it's kind of interesting to see that. Harry's absolutely right. They went to the, thought it's the barracks, but it's actually the stables and things like that. So,
and how many Americans lost their lives on that? Next picture, Andrew.
So at the end, of about 17 with the civilians
17?
Together.
Okay. Well, and we have
not that many.
We have a picture of Pershing and Carranza we're about to put up there. And beyond that, we have Obregón and El Paso, and then a submarine that snuck in here. The submarine we've already kind of talked about.
Yeah, the submarine. I mean, so the idea with the submarine is that Germans wanted to restart unrestricted submarine warfare. If you have the picture of you have Pershing and Carranza?
Number 0F, Andrew. That one.
Yeah. So this is really interesting to me, because one of the calculations of the Germans was that if the Americans go into Mexico, and Carranza at that time was declared de facto president, so he was accepted as president by the United States government, if the Americans would go into Mexico, there would be undoubtedly a clash between the Carrancista forces, the basically federal forces, and the Americans at some point. And at that point, and this is also one of the rationales why Villa probably did attack Columbus, at that point, all the Mexican forces would gang up together against the common enemy, the United States. So Germany would have their war. Pancho Villa would have Carranza taken out, because that would be an unwinnable war. And so that was kind of the idea.
So how'd it turn out?
Well, it turned out pretty badly for Pancho Villa. First of all, Florian just said, he got chased out of town quickly. A lot of raiders died right there in Columbus, and then Major Frank Tompkins rode after them for another half day and killed over 60, I think, is what he reported. And so that wasn't too good. Then Pancho Villa fled the Americans, and one of his own people shot him. So he got injured, shot him in the leg from behind. It's like a badly worked out badly for Villa. He was in horrible pain, and so he couldn't ride anymore. They had to carry him off on a stretcher.
Wow,
and he was one reason why Pershing never found him is that he was hiding out in a cave, literally,
yeah,
like Osama bin Laden.
Moving on to pictures, Andrew, the number G, Obregon and El Paso. And see, I'm not sure why these are in this order, but maybe you can tell me.
Well, we're just talking, what happened after Columbus. And I think, Florian, you can add a bunch more. But one of the things that, remember, we wanted to see if the Germans had anything to do with this and what they did. And what was really fascinating is that when Carranza wanted to pressure the Americans to leave Mexico, he restarted these raids. It's called the Plan de San Diego raids. And, there are books written about that. I found some evidence that Germany had at least some involvement in financing. There's a guy, Krum Heller, who came through El Paso, actually, and gave speeches rousing the Mexican-American crowd here against against the federal government. And so what happened then was a bunch of more raids. So it wasn't just Columbus. There was Glen Springs, Boquilas. There was a second punitive expedition. Nobody really knows about this, but from Texas, the American Army launched another expedition into Mexico.
Wow.
And it became absolutely certain to the Germans and other observers that the war was coming. This was it. And so Obregón actually came to El Paso to negotiate an end to these raids with the American government. And so he and General Scott met, and not a good meeting, because in the meeting, Obregón says, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to take San Antonio.
Yeah.
So he literally threatened war raids. But in the end, it didn't turn out that way. But
wasn't there also promise to the Mexicans early on through the Germans, the promise of returning, if they got involved and they won this war, that they would get back Texas, Arizona, and Pacific, those, all the way across to the west?
Yeah. Number one, Andrew.
So that was interesting. That's the Zimmerman telegram that comes in 1917, right? But and everybody goes like, how could the Germans offer this to the Mexicans? Actually, the other way around. So there's a Mexican colonel, Colonel Enrile, who went to Germany in 1915, or December 1915, January 1916, supposed to go to the German government to get funds. And his proposal, which was underwritten by Franz von Papen, the military attaché in Washington, his proposal was that if the Germans would send them arms, munitions, money, then they would help attack the United States, and all they wanted for it is to keep Texas, get Texas and Arizona back. So.
And we have some headlines in a newspaper there. I think it's number two, Andrew. The all kinds of things being discussed about here, but most of the stuff we're talking about right now, the influence that we're referring to, that was not reported. That wasn't known, was it?
most of it was not reported, and some things were reported and literally disappeared. Like this, I have this newspaper article there from March 8 in the Herald. Did you? I think that's
yeah.
That's actually way back in number one.
Okay,
number
don't
zero.
Worry about showing it. I just, you know, I just found this absolutely astonishing because it says that Pancho Villa is in the vicinity of Columbus with 400 or 500 soldiers. This is a day before the raid.
Yeah.
So, but which book have you not read where it says nobody knew they were coming? Give me a break. It was in the paper.
Yeah. Well, weren't a bunch of the commanding, the upper officers were at a dance in Deming, weren't they?
Yeah.
There was
a
big social event, and so all they left basically was the
base. Well, Florian, you probably know this story better than I do, but the commander of Columbus garrison got in pretty deep trouble, didn't he?
Yeah, for sure. So Colonel Slocum, he was not your average commander. And you see in some of the reports, even once they start the punitive expedition into Mexico, that Pershing doesn't like him too much. So he was independently rich. I don't know what he was really doing on the border. It was more like a hobby than anything else. So he's not the regular career soldier or officer that you would think of. But yeah, he did get in trouble. But yeah, there's so many different things that people talk about of, you know, the spies that come in previously before the attack and the information they give a Pancho Villa and stuff like that. But they, I think what you were talking about here with the newspaper that everybody sees, you see the big headlines that's obviously right after the attack, Villa attacks U.S. troops. But you also see all of the other stuff that goes on after the rest of the world. And I think that's kind of what we're trying to do here in just those 2 hours. What goes on in the rest of the world, and how is Columbus, New Mexico, so important, really, during the First World War? And the third headline over there, you see French troops battle under terrific fire to hold Verdun. So that's kind of my jump start there to go into, okay, the so what, militarily. And what did the punitive expedition or Mexican expedition really do for the U.S. Army, and you know how did would help the U.S. Army and U.S. forces then in World War II? So
take a pause right there, Florian. We're going to take a break here, and we'll come back and begin with the punitive expedition, which was kind of an unusual thing to be doing. But then so was the attack on Columbus. Both were kind of unusual.
Yeah.
So all right, taking a break here. Come back in just a moment.
If you're a local business owner, you know how important it is to be here for your customers. State Farm agent Ralph Dickerson runs a small business in El Paso, too. And Ralph Dickerson's here to help you protect your small business. Give him a call, 915-581-0000. Or come by his office, located at 497 North Wrestler, Suite A, right at the corner of Wrestler and Orizaba. Stop in today. Call 581-0000 for State Farm agent Ralph Dickerson.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the Juan and only margarita from the Cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs Restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
This is Andrew J. Polk with News Radio 690 KTSM. The COVID-19 coronavirus is still spreading in our community, and anyone who has been exposed or is showing symptoms is asked to get tested. Information on free testing is available at epstrong.org. Find details on how to register for the vaccine at epcovidvaccine.com. eprenthelp.org has resources for tenants and landlords on rental assistance, and epbusinessstrong.org has details on grant and loan funding. From the News Radio 690 KTSM News Desk, I'm Andrew J. Polk.
Help the planet with a tip from iHeartRadio Earth. Spending time outdoors can improve overall health and wellness. Celebrate Earth Day and take advantage of nature's health benefits by visiting a local park. Recreate responsibly to protect yourself and others and to make the outdoors safe and welcoming for people of all identities and abilities. Brought to you by iHeartRadio Earth and the National Environmental Education Foundation. To find more tips for smarter, sustainable living or to take action in your own community, go to iHeartRadio.com/earth.
Hey guys, it's Sue Cosner, your favorite health expert. Don't mind me as I interrupt your radio program. thousands come to me for advice about their disappointing performance in the bedroom. I urge men everywhere to try Noxetril, the powerful male pill that will transform your life. Well, I don't want to say I told you so, but I told you so. Don't take it from me. Listen to some satisfied partners.
I'm Jennifer, and ever since my boyfriend started using Noxetril, our life in the bedroom is incredible. His performance is so satisfying. I can't stop smiling. Thank you, Noxetril.
Hey, Sue, you got my husband off the couch to try Noxetril. It's like we're teenagers again. It really works.
Noxetril, the revolutionary formula developed with the highest quality natural ingredients. No more prescriptions. It's like Viagra on steroids. Call now and find out how to get a free bottle.
For a free bottle of Noxetril, call 800-993-0340. That's 800-993-0340. Free bottles for a limited time. Call now, 800-993-0340. That's 800-993-0340.
El Paso's News Radio, 690 KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
All right, who is on the air with us next week? And it's June 26th. We're going to find out what's happening in space history these days. Our guest is Chris Orwall, Director of New Mexico Museum of Space History, talks about his museum, but also all the recent worldwide space races in the last few years amongst all the billionaires. They're racing to get up into space, those guys are. July 3rd, El Paso Museum of History curator Erica Marin. She's our guest to describe the El Paso Museum of History and what's on display now. She is the curator, and she is, at the moment, the ranking officer there. July 10th, Executive Director Janae Field. We're going to send in some board members from the Frontera Land Alliance, and we're going to update about the Casner Range story and revisit that kind of history on the mountain.
Well, now we've got July 17th. The County Historical Commission is hosting a webinar talk, and this topic is 24 Reasons Historic Preservation is Good for Your Community and Lessons Learned Across the 10 Citywide Studies on the Economic, Social, and Environmental Impacts of Historic Preservation, and we'll hear all about that project. July 24th, UTEP Special Collections Head Librarians Claudia Rivers and Abby Weiser, smart ladies, will be our guests to talk about how to preserve personal documents, newspaper pictures, so they last longer. We'll also talk about the need for archive locations around El Paso.
Interesting history there coming up. And also, right now, we're talking a whole lot about the Mexican Revolution and the way things went. And we have Independent Scholar. I saw that on one of your emails. Independent scholar and author, Harry Heribert von Feilich.
Yes.
I'm getting
you
better.
Got it.
Getting better at this. And Florian Vital.
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 Don't let the
Well, but the thing is, Florian, are you in the book business? Have you done books? Have you written some books?
I've written some stuff for the U.S. Army, but not anything by myself, no.
You got to watch this guy, Harry. He knows how to do this. Follow his path. And you'll become a millionaire like him.
No, wait a minute.
He's a historian. Jackson,
that's
and
the
author.
One thing. That's the one thing we all have in common as historians. Is
you don't
wanna,
make any money.
Yeah. Don't try to get rich.
Well, I did 10 years of Leon Metz sitting over. He kept saying, "You know, if you want to make a living, don't do this." So, anyway,
but it's a lot of fun.
Oh well, good for you. And Florian, why are you so interested in this part of American history?
Well, I came down there back in 2015 the first time, and I just fell in love with the entire story. I think it reminds me a lot of my deployment to Afghanistan, some of the problems that we had in Afghanistan are pretty much the same problems that they faced when they went into Mexico. Mm-hmm. So, and it's for, you know, military historian, it's not just history for history's sake, it's the so what. What can we learn? What kind of insights can we gain? And that is really how I fell in love with this whole topic.
Well, there's a lot to be done here in the way of history, and let's stick on a couple more pictures. Andrew, put up whatever you think we're doing where we are here. Where are we? We had the beginning of the punitive expedition, basically, and talk about the brand new equipment that the United States pulled out to see if it would work.
Yeah, so I don't know what picture you're looking at. So from the newspaper, of course, you know, Columbus And nobody reports about Columbus in Europe, but everybody in U.S. Talks about the World War One going on, of course. So you should see one of the pictures that says La Voie Sacrée, which is the the sacred way. So that's in Verdun. Mm-hmm. That is a battle that goes on, which turns out to actually be the longest battle of World War One. Starts in February of 1916 and goes until December of 1916. There you can see in a picture of how they used motorized transportation. And the United States was so behind in many of those various technologies when we talk about the transportation, when we talk about airplanes, and so on and so forth. So this is the time during the Punic Expedition that gives the U.S. Army a chance to look at those various technologies, to perfect them, and this is really what they gain out of it. So the whole purpose of Germany is to hold the U.S. back. Well, at the end of the day, it didn't work out quite as they hoped for. So.
Well, answer me this question. We got to take another break real quick here. But why didn't it work? Why didn't the United States and Mexico go to war against each other as these guys were trying to make happen?
Well, so, I mean, I think for that we have to really start looking at what the U.S. was doing. So really moving down, I don't know if you see one of the maps that shows the line of communication, or the following map that talks about the Punic Expedition.
Number four, Andrew.
Number four, bravo. So you see of how the Punic Expedition goes in March 15, really utilizing the cavalry, mainly, utilizing the flying columns, which is something the U.S. Army has done. And this is how the U.S. Army has been working for the last few decades, really along the border, in regards to Indian Wars before that and so on and so forth. So they move all the way down to Parral. That is as far down as they go, which is a little over 500 miles from Columbus. And from there on, you start seeing the U.S. Army moving back, going back to the area around Colonia or Dublin. This is really where they have their headquarters, where Pershing has his headquarters. Hence, you saw one of those pictures of the planes before. The only way to reach those flying columns of the cavalry, because they were pushing out so far, was by use of those airplanes. So once they start moving back, it's really Pershing. That is one of the reasons why we are not going to war with Mexico. We have several skirmishes, the biggest one, of course, being in Carrizal in June of 1916. That is when we lose several U.S. troops from the 10th CAF. But it is the way that Pershing handles everything. And I think that is another reason why he is then utilized as the American Expeditionary Force commander going over to Europe in World War One. He is very laid back. He knows what the plan is. He knows he has to avoid war with the Mexican government at all costs. And I think that is one of the main reasons why they do not go to war at the end.
Very
interesting. Of course, there's some agreements as well.
Well, it's an interesting try that the Germans did. They tried to pull the U.S. into the war with Mexico. This is prior to World War One, which Germany was already fighting. They wanted the United States to become engaged on their southern border and forget about Europe, but basically was what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and I mean, Florian just said, I want to add to that how close it got.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the U.S. had an invasion plan. So Pershing was one column. Funston was to start a second column, and there's another column that was supposed to go down from the Baja California. So they, and of course, occupy Veracruz. There was a full-out battle plan ready to roll, and Scott went to Wilson and said, "Let's do it." And Pershing literally waited for orders any day. That was right around that time when the Carrizal clash happened with the Caran sisters, which was what the Germans were hoping for,
That's a bizarre war. I mean, the United States had an air base down in Chihuahua at one point. bizarre stuff going on here.
Yeah, the Chinese were not that great.
It's a crazy world. Yeah.
Anyway, they had it, though. Anyway, Harry von Feilich, and he's got books that he's going to have available today at Pepe's about 12:30. What do you got, about 10, 12 books you brought with you?
Yeah.
Oh, you had to fly
whatever
in.
Fits in a suitcase.
Well, so what's it?
Plus, I'm going to put it on our Facebook page where you can get the books on Amazon.
Yeah, you can buy them on Amazon.com or FelixSommerfeld.com or HenselstoneForlock.com. So all over the place.
But if you want one today autographed,
hey,
you got to see him at Pepe's.
Let's go to Pepe's.
About 12:30 by the time we get there. All right, fair enough. Taking a break here one more time and coming back with these guys. We have got Florian Vital. Vital?
Yes.
All right, Florian and Harry. We'll call it the Florian and Harry guest show. How about that?
There you go.
Melissa, you got more comments you got to talk about right now?
No. I'm working on his book for the page and everything.
Somebody
so.
Wanted
we'll
to
get
know
him when we come back.
Somebody wanted to know if that was their bicycle they saw in one of the photos. No, it was not. Yeah, but it wasn't hers. She wanted to know if it was hers. And never mind. All right, back in a moment. Taking a break here. Andrew, please go to commercial.
Many retired El Paso area homeowners don't know where to begin when it comes to downsizing and selling their home. Patrick Tuttle and his Legacy Home Team follow a proven process to help retired homeowners sell faster and for more money. Call Patrick Tuttle at 915-588-588. 1850 today and get your home sold faster and for more money. That's Patrick Tuttle at 915-588-1850. Call him today.
Monterey Asset Management is proud to sponsor the El Paso History Show. If you're tired of the ups and downs of the stock market, maybe you should invest in real estate. Monterey Asset manages apartments in El Paso and helps investors buy, hold, and sell property. See the new website, m1ep.com, m1ep.com. To learn more about the many benefits and long-term appreciation of investing in real estate, call Certified Property Manager Ray Baca, 915-592-4549, 592-4549.
Have you been putting off life insurance for a while? With the long application process, medical exams, and blood tests, it's no wonder you put it off. It can seem so confusing, expensive, and time-consuming. But Ethos is a new way to buy life insurance. Ethos is built with you in mind. Instead of a medical exam, you only have to answer a few health questions. Our application is 100% online and can be done in about 10 minutes. You might even get same-day coverage. At Ethos, we match you with the right policy and the right price from top-rated carriers, with no medical exams and no blood tests. Now you can spend less time sorting through confusing paperwork and more time with the loved ones you want to protect. Go to ethoslife.com today to apply in minutes. That's ethoslife.com. Ethos Technologies, Inc. operates in some states as Ethos Life Insurance Services. Not available in all states.
Hello, I'm Mackenzie with Exact Data. I'm excited to share how our team can help your business with its customer acquisition goals. Exact Data has been helping businesses of all sizes find new customers for over 20 years. With over 4,000 unique filters, you're sure to find the most targeted emails, postal addresses, and phone numbers fit for your business. Want a list of new homeowners in your area or looking to reach self-employed business owners? Maybe you're looking for people passionate about charitable causes or a list of medical professionals in your area. We can help. At Exact Data, we have the perfect list to help you grow your business. For pricing, text LIST to 606-MY-LEADS. Remember, text LIST to 606-695-3237, which spells 606-MY-LEADS, and we'll reply with the information you need to get leads for your business. Again, text LIST to 606-MY-LEADS, and you'll be well on your way to reaching your sales goals.
News Radio 690 KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Leech with Paso Souvenirs and Gift Shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Are you ready? This week, it's El Paso Inc., and you can find the latest in El Paso business news.
One of the Lower Valley's biggest farmers has big plans for a prime tract farmland.
In a one-on-one interview, El Paso's mayor talks taxes, COVID, the arena, and more.
El Paso state lawmakers are ready for a fight as Governor Abbott prepares to call a special session and vetoes funding for entire state legislature.
El Paso's Business Journal, El Paso Inc. is available for home or business delivery.
To receive El Paso Inc., order it online at elpasoinc.com.
Sunday night at 10:35 p.m., host Saul Sines on ABC 7 talks with newsmakers about stories in the borderland. If El Paso Electric gets the green light, your power bill could go up by possibly $12 a month. Not the kind of news you want to hear about as temperatures rise and they're soaring and your AC unit has to work overtime to keep your family cool.
Well, just put it up to 89 and you'll be fine.
I'm sorry.
ABC 7 Sunday Extra host Saul Sines sits down with El Paso Electric executives to ask why they are asking for a rate increase and why they need to build a new power plant called Newman 6 and what you can do to keep your power bill low. That's this Sunday on ABC 7 Extra at 10:35 p.m. after ABC 7 at 10.
We had an off-air request. Where can I find those videos you mentioned on the morning show with Bernie Sargent, where he's a reporter? You go to youtube.com/El Paso History TV. There's 20 of those on there. If you go and run those, you'll be a pretty good expert on lots of El Paso by the time you do that. And that's why we did this. Harry, I don't know what kind of history you grew up with, but the history in El Paso, I grew up here. They didn't tell me what happened here. No, in the schools, it's not part of curriculum. So I'm on a rant all the time about teaching people their history, and I put my money where my mouth is. All that stuff on YouTube is for free.
That's fantastic.
And if you want to go look at stuff and learn El Paso history, you can just sit there on YouTube for a couple of days. And we put all the documentaries on for free. When the COVID thing hit, I got to thinking, well, what are people going to do? We're not selling many DVDs. Who cares? And so I just put them up there, and you can now see all of those documentaries for no charge.
That's fantastic.
As we say in El Paso, no charge.
Well, you do so much for history. I just, you know, if I may say that this radio show is a gem. You can't find something like that anywhere in the country.
Well, thanks.
And you guys are just absolutely fantastic for doing this.
We've been volunteering for decades. Melissa came on about, what, 11 years ago? I've been doing this for 21. And the guy ahead of us, Leon Metz, we stand on his shoulders because he decided he's going to just go do it. The thing is, you can't find this kind of radio show in hardly any city in America.
Never heard it before.
And they should have one in every city.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
The catch is, in El Paso, the history is so intense and so varied and so layered, you kind of need to talk about it all the time to make sense out of it. We're talking about the Mexican Revolution, the raid on Columbus, incredibly unprecedented world-level events that went on. And that's just one part of what happened here.
Yeah.
On and on and on. But let's get back into it. Where do we want to go here? Florian, we're looking at talking about some of the things that happened after the punitive expedition got going. They had we had light trucks on picture number 8, number 7, army trucks going on. And so they were testing out all the stuff. We have also the bunch of trucks in the punitive expedition and various pictures. Andrew, just run through those. But isn't that mainly one of the big things that happened was the mechanization and how they got to test it all out here?
Yeah, it's really amazing. Hence, I started with the whole thing, what's going on in France. Well, guess what? Over in the U.S., the U.S. Army had a little over 100 vehicles at that point before the punitive expedition. Right after the Columbus raid, they were well aware that, hey, how do we supply our troops down there? Once they go down there, they were not able to really use the railroad system in Mexico. So how do you bring them their food? How do you bring them all of the supplies that they need? And this goes back to those trucks. We needed those trucks. And you see, of course, in the Harrisburg Telegraph from July of 1916, of how Packard has put 716 trucks in U.S. service. You see a lot of pictures. You see a lot of reports about that. And it was actually the Secretary of War, Newton Baker, he was able to spend $450,000 of unappropriate funds to purchase new trucks. So we went from nothing to a fleet of trucks that were able to support that. And we, of course, with that came a lot of problems too. We had no drivers. We didn't have the folks that could fix it, so on and so forth. So we had a lot of pretty much contractors in the U.S. Army that were driving down to Mexico, showing soldiers of how to do it. And that is, once again, one way of how we were then prepared later on for World War One, because we had a fleet.
These guys were always looking for a gas station, too. I mean, that was kind of pretty scary.
Logistical nightmare.
Whatever they had to bring it with them. So, yeah, I mean, we talked about the planes, of course. Well, guess what? They had to bring the gas for them as well.
Oh, yeah.
As well as the spare parts. And the first Aero Squadron is simply amazing. Of all the firsts that they have, the benchmarks that happened during the punitive expedition, I mean, they had to have those mobile machine shops. And, of course, that was the first time they then really deployed them. They had those various truck trains. Let me see what else. The first Aero Reconnaissance Flight. so on and so forth. First, the U.S. Army Airman became a prisoner of war, which was Captain Fulwars when he was in Chihuahua City. I mean, the stories and the first is just amazing. And the experience that every soldier, and there was, at the end, there were about 10,000 U.S. soldiers that served in Mexico itself. Those are really the people that make out the, you know, the big part of that then goes to World War One. Those are going to be the officers. Those are going to be the NCOs. Those are the ones that have the experience once we start mobilizing the troops in 1917 to go over to Europe.
I see an armored machine gun on here. That looks interesting. So they did quite a bit of stuff. But they didn't get rid of the cavalry till the middle of World War II. The U.S. still had cavalry up until 1943. It's amazing.
We still have mules in the German army, as far as I know.
Oh,
we really? Carry the artillery carries one gun at a time up the Alps and makes a shot, and then they disassemble it and carry it back down all the mules.
God, Melissa, are you finding people on Facebook looking at us again here?
I was just posting the link to Harry's book.
Oh, good.
If people can't go to Pepe's today after lunch to visit with us and meet Harry and get one autographed, you can also get them online in a couple different places, Amazon Books, of course, and then also at felixsommerfeld.com, which has the one it puts up here right now is The Secret War Castle. Because how many books have you written now?
Well, so I have four history books, and one is actually a nonfiction book on negotiation.
Ooh.
So I'm getting into psychology here.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah, there you go. And where do you want to go from here? Because we got, not like number 15, there's a help Men Wanted poster trying to get people to get involved in the war.
Well, let's pick up where Florian was taking us. You know, the first thing is that's amazing is how quickly the U.S. Army actually supplied itself with this equipment. Why? Because they made it for the Entente, for the Allies. This is what Sommerfeld told the German government. Man, if we can get an intervention, they're going to have to arm themselves. They can't sell it to the Allies. And so these trucks, they used to go to France. They used to go to England. They used to go to Russia.
So this effort stopped the supply going to Europe.
Yes, yes.
And that was one of their goals.
It was a huge deal.
Ah,
and
okay.
So the supply was in the country, but the army didn't have it. And Franz von Papen actually in, I think it was beginning of World War I, 1914, there was like the questions posed to him from the German general staff. Well, if the U.S. would go into the war on the side of the Entente, how dangerous would that be for us? And Papen wrote back, this is the worst equipped army I've ever seen my whole life. So at that point, they didn't think it was a danger, you know?
Bad idea.
You know, if you think about the amount of people, by the summer of 1916, so we're talking, Columbus happened in March, right? So then we start the punitive expedition. By June, we are really building up the forces. By July, the New York Harbor blows up. One of our callers said that earlier today, right? So the Germans set the New York Harbor on fire, caused an earthquake 5.5 on the Richter scale.
Oh, really?
Downtown New York.
It was an amazing explosion.
So by that time, by July, basically the entire U.S. Army is either in Mexico or at the border. One division was defending Washington, D.C. The rest was down here. And then, because it wasn't enough to guard against the raids that came from Mexico, the Plan de San Diego raids, the whole reserve was called up. So another, I forgot what it was, 100-some thousand soldiers were called up from the reserves. And guess what? They all got equipped.
Yeah.
So, and they all got trained. And the only problem for Germany was, you better start your submarine warfare quickly, because when they got ready, they went to Europe and beat the hell out of the Germans.
And one of the reasons that I also know that they were well-equipped is many of them had they brought their own rifles them. Especially the reserve, because they had all this. Everybody had a gun back then.
So this is actually something I would love to ask Florian, because I could never figure that out. The Jennies were kind of the worst airplanes you could get.
Flying coffin.
I mean, they were so rickety. But there were a bunch of great pilots, and there were a bunch of good planes, actually, all over the U.S., mostly privately owned. And I never understood why the Army wouldn't just hire up some of those guys and let them fly for them. Do you know the answer to that, Florian?
I think when I talked before to the First Aerospace Foundation folks, Rick, he talked about it, of how a lot of stuff wasn't being able to done by the U.S. military because of all the patents that were in there. So this way, they couldn't, because of patents in place, the U.S. Army couldn't really produce too many different planes and things like that.
Okay.
But you brought up in regards to pilots, which is actually one of the side notes that I had about the Battle of Verdun. So at the same time, when that was going on, there was actually, of course, American pilots already over in Europe, part of the Lafayette Escadrille. Mm-hmm. And one of those pilots, Horace Clyde Balsley, he was actually from El Paso.
Oh, really?
It was kind of funny to see that. But yeah, so
interesting history. All right, take a break here, gentlemen, and come back in a bit. And ladies, we have ladies in the studio here.
Two ladies.
We have at least one, but not two. Yeah, there are two. So taking a break here, come back. We'll tell you more about to wrap this up and where you can get these books, including today. Back in just a moment.
El Paso History TV is now available for free on YouTube.com. Take a look at recent ABC 7 news reports by Bernie Sargent on El Paso History TV about Waco tanks, the Franklin Mountains, Concordia Cemetery, and more. The YouTube channel also has more than 100 videos about El Paso history with lectures, documentaries, and various history clips. Go to YouTube.com/El Paso History TV and find out how Texas history begins in El Paso.
Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, you save an average of $889. State Farm agent Ralph Dickerson is ready to help you combine home and auto and save here in El Paso. Call 915-581-0000 today. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Average annual per household savings based on a 2019 national survey by State Farm of new policyholders who reported savings by switching to State Farm.
For victims of drunk and drug driving, our grief is unique. But you are not alone. You always have a place at MAD. Call our 24-hour victim helpline at 877-MAD-HELP or visit MAD.org.
It's all about the nose. It's your air filter, the first line of defense against bacteria and viruses. If too many germs get stuck in your nose, guess what? You get sick. That's why it's so important to keep your nose clean, just like washing your hands. Nasal irrigation gets rid of germs by rinsing the nasal cavity, but neti pots are hard to use and, frankly, kind of gross. Now there's a better way to keep your nose clean and help your body protect itself. It's called Navage Nasal Care. Navage uses powered suction to flush out allergens, mucus, bacteria, and viruses. Millions use Navage for fast, all-natural relief from sinus congestion and allergies and to breathe better, sleep deeper, snore less, and feel healthier without drugs. Navage is easy to use, affordable, and comes with an absolute guarantee of satisfaction. You wash your hands and brush your teeth every day. Now it's time to start cleaning your nose with Navage. At Navage.com, CVS, Walgreens, Bed Bath, Target, and Rite Aid. Navage, N-A-V-A-G-E. Clean nose, healthy life.
Let radio advertising keep your business top of mind with customers all summer long. Visit iHeartAdBuilder.com to get your business on the radio quickly and easily. You can even make your own radio ad. Just answer a few questions and we'll do the rest. Sign up today at iHeartAdBuilder.com.
News Radio 690, KTSM El Paso.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Let you know real quick, they are selling books today down at Five Points, and you go to that little Texaco service station, 2871 Grant, that's the one that Rod Davenport renovated, and the El Paso County Historical Society owns that now. They are selling their book in there today up until 1 p.m., and it's the book called Lost Restaurants of El Paso. That is going on today until 1 o'clock at the Texaco service station down in Five Points.
Well, you gave me a duplicate on that. So
the bottom.
Yeah, I know. Okay, the El Paso County Historical's got mouth-watering and memories flooding back in with the release of earlier this year of the Lost Restaurants of El Paso. And now you can get your hands on a copy and get up close and personal to one of Sun City's most iconic buildings. The historic 101-year-old former Texaco service station at 2871 Grant will have a backdrop for the El Paso County Historical Commission's Lost Restaurants of El Paso book sale. And you can learn all about Jackson's, Ashley Gardens, Bill Park's Barbecue, among many of the lost and forgotten restaurants of El Paso. And check out the celebrated Central El Paso landmark Texaco service station.
And at the other end of the county, we're going to be at Pepe's, 6761 Donovan, and we will have books out there available from Harry. You're going to have a whole pile of them out there.
Oh, enough to that whatever fit in my suitcase.
Yeah,
so. Whatever they allow.
All right, we're about out of the time on this thing. Do you got a summation, Florian, on what happened with the punitive expedition?
I think one of the last things we do have to talk about is really the, one of the National Guard milestones as the National Defense Act of 1916. So that act was enforced in June of 1916, and it's really probably the most important guard legislation in the nation's history. And this is where we get, and we still have the same things today, in regards to of how many drills a year a National Guard soldier can do, how many annual training, how the president can call up the National Guard to be in federal service. In there, by the way, we also found that at that point, the Army then would acquire another 375 new airplanes. And just what we heard from Harry, yes, we had at that point 8 airplanes, and most or all of them were either destroyed by flying in the punitive expedition, or they were destroyed by Captain von Wahr himself because they were unsafe at the end. So with this act, National Defense Act of 1960, is when we received all of those kind of things. Also, the beginning of the Reserve Officer Training Corps, ROTC, in universities came out of this. So this is, once again, the reason why we were ready for World War One, and truly even afterwards, when any time we had to call up, mobilize National Guard troops, how we get our officers trained, so on and so forth, came out of that.
Oh, yeah.
Which is not just because, of course, of Columbus, New Mexico, truly the Mexican Revolution and really what's going on along the border.
Oh, it was a big deal.
Like Harry said, over 110,000 National Guard troops were called up,
Harry,
after that act.
All right, Harry, what are your last thoughts on this?
Well, Melissa just told me that my son Philip submitted a question. The question was, well, why did they not go to war, Mexico and the United States?
Yeah,
and
what
that's
happened?
That's a really key question. And and it is literally President Wilson and President Carranza pulled their countries back from the brink. They made the decision not to do it. Wilson resisted the people in his government, in his administration, and Carranza and his. And so that was the saving thing. It was literally the two top guys at the top. Otherwise, this thing was going straight to war,
yeah,
and it would have been quite a massacre.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much for coming in. You actually flew in to do this interview.
I did.
And he's on the other side of the world coming in here. Thank you very much.
Well, you see how important El Paso is.
It is.
The history is magnetic.
And
happy Father's Day tomorrow.
Happy anniversary.
And Florian, thanks for joining us by phone. Appreciate that. Everybody else, we'll see you at Pepe's. Thank you very much. And in Andrew in the control room, thank you kindly. Monday through Friday, that boy's on the radio at 4 to 5 p.m. Thanks a lot. See you all next week right here on the El Paso History Radio Show.
Thank you for listening to the El Paso History Show. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday morning, 10 to noon, and be sure to tell a friend about us. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. Thank you for joining us from the studios of News Radio 690 KTSM AM El Paso.